All right, welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive? This time, we're heading to 20th century India, specifically the latter half, to explore its economic evolution. It's a story of modernization, globalization, and, of course, a fair share of challenges along the way. And to help us untangle this intricate web, we've got a mix of historical accounts and economic analyses. This is going to be a fascinating ride, so buckle up.
Definitely. It's really a story that goes beyond just like numbers and policies. It's fascinating how these economic shifts impacted everything from daily life to India's role on the world stage.
Exactly. It's like watching this chain reaction, but in slow motion. So let's rewind to the beginning. India in the 1960s, newly independent, fresh out of British rule. What did the economic landscape look like back then?
Well, you got to consider centuries of East India Company influence followed by direct British rule. That legacy doesn't just disappear overnight. There were these lingering colonial structures, like the steel frame of the civil service, that continued to shape how things operated.
So not exactly a clean break. Did those remnants of the British Raj hold India back? Or did they maybe provide some sort of foundation?
It's kind of both, honestly.
Yeah.
Sure, some systems were inherited, but this new India was forging its own identity, both politically and economically. And that's really important to remember.
Okay, so that's the backdrop. Now, one of the first major events we stumble upon is this thing called the Green Revolution. I'm picturing fields bursting with crops, but I'm guessing it's a bit more complex than that.
Oh, the Green Revolution was a turning point, no doubt. It brought about remarkable agricultural growth, driven by these new technologies like high-yielding wheat varieties and a massive expansion of irrigation.
Sounds like a home run. So what's the catch?
Well, like most things, the benefits weren't exactly spread evenly. Wheat-growing regions like Punjab and Haryana saw huge gains, but rice-growing regions like Bengal, not so much.
So a story of progress, but with some pretty significant caveats. It's kind of like how we talk about the digital divide today, right? Access to technology isn't universal. Feels like a similar situation, just in a different context.
Precisely. Technological advancements don't just magically erase existing inequalities. Sometimes they can even worsen them if we're not careful. The Green Revolution is a prime example of that.
It's like that saying, a rising tide lifts all boats. But what if some boats are already underwater? Makes you think about how progress needs to be inclusive, not just focused on overall growth.
Absolutely. And as India started to move towards industrialization, this unevenness, this gap between different regions and sectors, it remained a key factor.
Okay, so let's shift gears and talk about that industrial development. I know India gradually moved towards a more liberalized economy, but how did they get there? What were those early steps like?
It was a pretty complex transition. Initially, India adopted this strategy called import substitution industrialization, basically limiting imports to encourage domestic industries.
So it's like putting training wheels on your own industries,
right?
Letting them grow stronger before exposing them to the full force of global competition.
That's a great way to put it. But over time, India realized it needed to open up its economy more to really modernize. That's where those market-oriented reforms, the liberalization policies, started to come into play.
I'm sensing this is where things get really interesting. Maybe a little bumpy, too.
You're not wrong. Liberalization came with its own set of challenges, especially when it came to integrating into the global economy while still trying to safeguard domestic interests. Inflation became a persistent problem, often tied to events happening far beyond India's borders.
Like how? Give me an example.
Think about the 1987 drought, devastating impact on agricultural production in India, and that rippled outward, affecting food prices and inflation rates globally. A stark reminder of how interconnected national economies are, even when it comes to something seemingly local like a drought.
Wow, it's like the butterfly effect, but on a global scale. One event in one place can trigger a cascade of consequences across the world.
Exactly. And it's a dynamic that's still relevant today, even more so with globalization and the rapid flow of, well, everything. But before we get too deep into that, I think we got to talk about the political landscape surrounding all these economic changes. It's a crucial piece of the puzzle.
Right. It's like trying to understand a movie without paying attention to the soundtrack. We've got this economic drama unfolding, but there's a political score playing in the background that's influencing everything.
Exactly. Figures like Indira Gandhi, political parties rising and falling, all this directly impacted the economic policies being put into action.
So we can't really separate the economics from the politics. It's all intertwined.
Absolutely. And that interplay between politics and economics is something we'll keep seeing as we explore India's journey in the latter half of the 20th century.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how events, policies, and even personalities all kind of weave together to shape a nation's course.
Yeah.
It's like a giant tapestry, and we're trying to trace the threads, right? Speaking of threads, let's tug on that Green Revolution one a bit more. We talked about how its impact wasn't exactly equal across the board. Can we break that down a bit?
Sure. So the Green Revolution was largely centered around wheat production. Places like Punjab and Haryana, with their fertile land and existing irrigation systems, they were really set up for success. Those new high-yielding wheat varieties, they just thrived there.
But what about the rice-growing regions? Why didn't they see the same boom?
Well, there are a couple reasons. First, those new rice varieties that were developed weren't really as suited to the specific climate and soil conditions in many rice-growing areas of India. And second, rice farming in those regions, while it often happened on these smaller, more fragmented plots of land, it was just harder to effectively apply those new technologies.
So it wasn't just about handing farmers new seeds. The infrastructure, the scale of operations, even the geography, it all mattered.
Precisely. And that's a crucial point. Even the most groundbreaking tech can't solve every problem. There's always a context, a bigger picture to consider.
Like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. Sometimes the solution has to be tailor-made for the specific situation.
And that brings us to the next stage of India's economic story. Industrialization. We mentioned how India initially went with that import substitution model, but like you said earlier, there were some hiccups along the way.
I'm curious about those hiccups. What were the drawbacks of trying to build up domestic industries by, well, essentially shutting out imports?
For one thing, it can lead to inefficiencies. If your industries are shielded from competition, there's less incentive to innovate, to become more productive, and you also run the risk of ending up with higher prices for consumers.
So it's a balancing act, trying to nurture your own industries, but potentially sacrificing efficiency and affordability in the process.
Precisely. And over time, India realized this approach wasn't really sustainable in the long run. The world was becoming more and more interconnected, and India needed to find a way to participate in that global market while also safeguarding its own interests.
Okay, so this is where liberalization comes in, opening up to trade, welcoming foreign investment, and basically letting market forces play a bigger role. But I imagine that wasn't an easy shift.
It wasn't. It was a very delicate balancing act. And like we discussed before, one of the major challenges that popped up was inflation.
Right, that 1987 drought really threw a wrench in the works, didn't it?
It did. It really highlights how even seemingly localized events can have these ripple effects across the global economy. A drought in India can lead to higher food prices, which then impacts inflation rates in other countries. It's a domino effect.
It makes you realize how interconnected we all are, even on a purely economic level. We're all part of this intricate web of supply chains, trade routes, and financial flows.
Exactly. And it's a web that's only gotten more complex and intertwined in the decades since. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's zoom back in on India. We've talked a lot about the big economic policies, but I'm curious about how these changes actually played out in everyday life. Did people feel these shifts on a personal level?
That's what I'm always most interested in, the human stories behind the headlines.
Well, one of the most noticeable impacts was the rise of consumer culture. As the economy grew, more and more people had disposable income. And they started buying things like refrigerators, televisions, scooters, things that were once considered luxuries.
So kind of like that classic image of the American dream, but playing out in India.
In a way, yes. It was a sign of growing prosperity, but it also had a significant impact on social norms, family structures, even religious practices.
That makes sense. When your material circumstances change, it inevitably impacts other parts of your life, your values, your aspirations.
Absolutely. And these cultural and social changes weren't always smooth sailing. There were tensions, conflicts, and resistance as people grappled with these rapid transformations.
I can imagine. It's like being caught between two worlds, the comfort of tradition and the pull of modernity. How did people handle that tension?
That's a great question. It played out in different ways in political debates, religious movements, artistic expressions. It was a time of excitement, but also uncertainty as India tried to find its new path, balancing its rich heritage with its aspirations for the future.
So it wasn't just about economic indicators going up or down. It was about real people grappling with big questions about their identity, their values, their place in the world.
Precisely. And as we keep exploring India's economic journey in the latter half of the 20th century, it's important to keep that human dimension in mind.
Okay, so we've got this multi-layered story unfolding: economic policies, political maneuvers, cultural shifts, and those personal stories of individuals caught in the middle of it all. A lot to take in. What's the one thing you'd want listeners to walk away with so far?
I think the key takeaway is this. Economic transformation is never just about the numbers. It's about people. It's about choices, consequences, and that constant interplay between individual lives and the bigger forces shaping the world around us. And in India's case, it's a story that's still being written.
That's a powerful point. It reminds us that history isn't just something in a textbook. It's a living, breathing thing that's still shaping our present and our future. But before we get too philosophical, let's dive back into the specifics of India's economic journey. We've talked about the Green Revolution and industrialization, but there's another big piece of the puzzle we need to address, liberalization.
Ah, yes, liberalization. That's where things get really interesting on a global scale.
Exactly. India starts opening up its economy, embracing market forces, integrating into the world economy in a whole new way. What were the driving forces behind this shift?
Well, there were a number of factors. By the 1980s, it was pretty clear that the import substitution model had run its course.
We talked about those limitations earlier, the potential inefficiencies, the higher prices for consumers.
Right. And on top of that, the global economy was undergoing massive change. New technologies popping up, trade barriers coming down. In countries like India, they realized they had to adapt if they wanted to keep up.
So it was partly a response to internal pressures, those limitations of the existing model, and partly a response to external pressures, the changing dynamics of the global economy.
Exactly. A combination of push and pull factors. And of course, the political context played a role as well.
Right. Can't forget about that political soundtrack playing in the background.
Absolutely. Indira Gandhi's return to power in 1980, that marked a real shift in political priorities. She was determined to revitalize the Indian economy, make it more competitive globally, and she saw liberalization as a big part of that strategy.
So it sounds like liberalization wasn't just an economic policy, it was a political statement too, a signal that India was ready to engage with the world on its own terms.
That's a great way to put it. It was a bold move, and it definitely came with its own set of challenges.
I'm sure there were plenty of people who weren't too happy about this move towards a more open market economy.
There were. Liberalization brought concerns about job losses, traditional industries disappearing, the potential for exploitation by foreign companies. It was a very complex and controversial issue.
Like they say, change is hard, but sometimes it's necessary.
Exactly. And for India, liberalization was seen as a necessary step to modernize the economy, boost growth, and integrate into that global marketplace.
Okay, so we've set the stage. India's on this path of liberalization, but it's not a smooth ride. What were some of the specific challenges they faced?
Well, one of the most immediate was managing inflation. As the economy opened up, there was this influx of foreign goods, which put pressure on prices to go down. But at the same time, demand for certain goods and services was increasing, which could drive prices up.
So it's like trying to balance on a seesaw. You've got these competing forces pushing prices up and down.
Precisely. Finding that equilibrium wasn't easy. The government had to implement various policies to try and keep inflation in check, like adjusting interest rates and managing the money supply.
I imagine there was also a lot of pressure to create jobs, especially as some of those traditional industries began to decline.
Absolutely. Job creation became a major political concern as people worried about how globalization would impact their livelihoods. The government had to find ways to support the growth of new industries while also providing safety nets for those who were displaced by the economic shifts.
It's a delicate balancing act, trying to embrace the opportunities of a globalized economy while also addressing the potential downsides.
Exactly. And it's a challenge that many countries are still struggling with today.
So it's not like India had this unique set of problems. These are universal challenges that come with navigating the complexities of a globalized world.
Precisely. And by looking at how India approached these challenges, we can get some valuable insights into those broader dynamics of economic transformation and global integration.
Okay, so we've talked about the challenges, but what about the successes? Did liberalization deliver on its promises?
Well, that's a tough one. There's no denying that liberalization led to considerable economic growth in India. The economy opened up, foreign investment came pouring in, new industries emerged, but the benefits of that growth weren't always evenly distributed.
We've seen that pattern before, progress, but with some strings attached.
Exactly. While some parts of society prospered, others were left behind. Income inequality grew, and those regional disparities persisted.
So it's not a straightforward success story. It's a story with both progress and setbacks, winners and, well, those who didn't fare as well.
Exactly. And it's a story that continues to unfold today as India navigates this ever-evolving global economic landscape.
It's fascinating to see how all these threads, economic policies, political decisions, social and cultural changes, all come together to create this complex tapestry of India's journey in the latter half of the 20th century.
It truly is. And it's a journey packed with lessons for anyone interested in understanding the intricacies of economic development, globalization, and how these large-scale transformations affect people.
Totally agree. But before we get too caught up in the big picture, I want to focus on one specific aspect of liberalization that I find particularly interesting. The role of technology.
Ah, yes. Technology played a crucial role in shaping India's economic path during this period.
I'm thinking specifically about the IT sector, which really began to take off in the late 80s and early 90s. Was that a direct result of liberalization?
It definitely had a part to play. Liberalization created a much more welcoming environment for foreign investment, which helped fuel the growth of the IT sector.
It was like opening the doors and letting the fresh air in.
Exactly. And the Indian IT industry, it was quick to seize those opportunities. A highly skilled workforce, relatively low labor costs, a growing pool of entrepreneurs.
Almost like India was in the perfect position to capitalize on that specific moment in history.
In many ways, it was. And the rise of the IT sector had a huge impact on the Indian economy. It created jobs, boosted exports, and really changed how India was perceived globally.
Like, India went from being known for its traditional industries like textiles and agriculture to being this global powerhouse in technology and innovation.
Exactly. And that transformation is still happening today. India is now a major player in the global tech scene, with a flourishing startup environment and more multinational companies setting up shop there.
A remarkable story of adaptation and innovation.
It really is. And it highlights how liberalization, combined with the right conditions and a willingness to embrace change, can lead to some really extraordinary transformations.
So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, what's the key takeaway you'd want our listeners to think about?
I think the main point is that economic transformation is rarely a straight line. It's full of twists and turns, challenges and opportunities. And it's a process that's deeply intertwined with political, social, and cultural forces.
Well said. And as we move on to the final part of India's journey in the latter half of the 20th century, we'll see those complexities play out in even more fascinating ways.
Yeah, it's like peeling back the layers of an onion. And with each layer, we uncover new insights and complexities.
I love that analogy. So we've talked about like the internal dynamics of India's economic shift, the Green Revolution, industrialization, liberalization. But I'm also thinking about the external context, right? This period, the 1960s to early 1990s, it was the peak of the Cold War. The world was divided, tensions were high. How did India navigate that polarized world while also trying to, you know, modernize its economy?
It's a really good question, and it really highlights India's unique position globally at the time. They adopted this policy of non-alignment, basically refusing to choose sides between the U.S. and the Soviet Union.
That sounds incredibly tricky. Trying to play both sides without actually playing either side, how did that work out in practice?
Well, it had its pluses and minuses. On the one hand, India could get aid and support from both superpowers, which helped fuel its industrial growth. But on the other hand, that balancing act, it could create some uncertainty for foreign investors who were, well, a little wary of Cold War politics.
So it was a bit of a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Benefiting from both sides, but also being kind of caught in the middle.
Exactly. And it shows how economics and geopolitics are always kind of entangled. You can't really understand one without understanding the other.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about policies, but I want to bring it back to people.
Yeah.
How did all these changes, the Green Revolution, industrialization, liberalization, how did they impact people's everyday lives in India?
Well, one of the most noticeable changes was the rise of consumer culture. As the economy grew and more people entered the middle class, they had more disposable income. And suddenly things like refrigerators, televisions, scooters, things that were once seen as luxuries, they became accessible to a much larger part of the population.
That makes sense. Economic growth usually leads to changes in how people spend their money, right? Yeah,
absolutely. And the shift towards consumerism had a ripple effect on social norms, family structures, even religious practices. It's interesting how those material changes can influence seemingly unrelated parts of life.
It's like a domino effect. One change triggers another, and then the whole landscape is different.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that not everyone embraced these changes. There was resistance, there was nostalgia for the old ways, and some genuine concern about the pace and direction of change.
I imagine it must have felt pretty overwhelming for some, especially those who are more rooted in traditional ways of life. It's like being swept up in a current that you can't control.
That's a good way to put it. And it's something we see in many societies that are experiencing rapid transformation, that tension between tradition and modernity, between the familiar and the unknown, it's a powerful force.
Makes you realize that history isn't just dates and events. It's about the real life experiences of people living through those changes.
Absolutely. And those individual stories, the hopes, fears, and aspirations of people navigating these key moments, they're often the most captivating parts of history.
Couldn't agree more. Well, we've covered a ton of ground in this deep dive. We've explored India's economic transformation from all angles, the policies, the challenges, the successes, and most importantly, the impact on people. As we wrap up, what are some final thoughts, some key takeaways you hope our listeners will take with them?
I think the most important takeaway is that economic development is never a straightforward story. It's this complex tapestry woven from so many threads, political decisions, social trends, technological advancements, and the choices people make. And understanding that complexity is essential if we want to really grasp the world around us.
That's such a great point. It reminds us to look beyond the surface, to consider the nuances, to appreciate how everything is connected.
Exactly. And when it comes to India, it's a story that's still being written. That economic transformation that started in the latter half of the 20th century, it's still shaping India's path today, and its impact is felt globally.
So it's not just a history lesson. It's a story that's still relevant to our present and our future.
Precisely. And I hope this deep dive has sparked some curiosity in our listeners, encouraged them to keep exploring India's journey and its role in the world. It's a story full of insights, challenges, and ultimately a testament to the resilience and ingenuity of humanity.
Well said. And to all our listeners out there, thanks for joining us on this incredible exploration. Until next time, keep those minds curious and keep diving deep into the complexities of our world.